31.
31.
31. So chapter 31, we're still on the first page, which in the old print, the letter in the Hebrew is 78.
Page
139. 139? Yeah. Okay, so let me bring everybody up to snuff since we have a lot of new faces today. Sadness is a really big problem. It's not good in any way, shape, or form. As a rule, sadness contributes nothing towards healthy living. And people intuitively know and understand this, and everybody's looking for happiness. Aristotle's been selling this for 2,000 years already. Everybody's looking and wants to be happy. Because when you're happy, you can be more effective. When you're happy, you can live well. When you're happy, everything falls into place. And when you're miserable, when you're sad, or when you're not, it's the ultimate, what you would call, inhibitor of life. It just infects everything, it poisons everything. But being happy is not so simple. That's why it's a $1 billion industry. And people write self-help books every single year that go into vogue and out of vogue, and everybody's still looking for happiness. The Alter Rebbe, specifically, and Chassidus in general, places tremendous emphasis on the concept of happiness. In a different school of Chassidus, Reb Nachman of Breslov even went so far as to say it's a mitzvah gedolah lihiyos b'simcha. It's a big mitzvah to be b'simcha, which, I mean, that was his approach, and it's not the Alter Rebbe's approach. He doesn't say it's a mitzvah to be b'simcha. He says you can't do the mitzvahs if you're not b'simcha. So it's not a mitzvah per se. Joy in and of itself is not redeeming. Joy in and of itself is not an end, but joy in and of itself is a means to every end, effectively, in a good way. And the Alter Rebbe dealt with sadness and dealt with depression and gave you a strategy to overcome this in chapters 26 and 27. And then, later on in chapter 29, the Alter Rebbe started to deal with a new problem. And this is the problem of unresponsiveness. Because after the Alter Rebbe sets up his system of, you know, how Avodas Hashem is supposed to work, who you are, what you can be, and what this is all about, he starts troubleshooting. He goes through issues. Here's issue A, issue B, issue B, and gives you strategies to deal with them. So the issue that the Alter Rebbe dealt with, beginning in chapter 29, 30, is the concept of unresponsiveness, spiritual unresponsiveness. I nicknamed it EDD, right? Spiritual EDD. Not attention deficit disorder, but emotional deficit disorder. There's certain things which are supposed to elicit emotion. They're supposed to move you, and they're not moving you. I say, what's wrong with me? How come this doesn't move me? How come this doesn't touch me? Everybody around me is aroused or excited. Everybody around me is moved, and I'm not moved. And a textbook is things are supposed to move you. You're supposed to contemplate these things and think about this, and you're supposed to get excited about Yiddishkeit. It's not working. So the Alter Rebbe introduced this idea of the breaking and shattering the enamel of the Yetzer Hara. You have this thick shell, this wall around you that's disabling you from getting to your core. In order to get to that core, you have to break down the walls. And when you break down the walls, then the reservoir of spiritual energy that resides at the core essence of your being will suddenly begin to resonate and illuminate and sparkle again, and everything's going to be great. So after he finished giving you that whole strategy, the Alter Rebbe now here goes back to some troubleshooting. So 1 second. If we're going to think about how do we break the wall? We break the wall with sobering thoughts. Very sobering thoughts. In other words, the person's arrogance, which creates this indifference, has to be dismantled. And how does he dismantle the arrogance? He tells you you're not so great. He tells you all kinds of things to think about how you're a failure and your inappropriateness is abominable. You're lower than an animal. Alter Rebbe says, 1 second. This is a problem. When somebody's finished doing this whole contemplation, he may have shattered the wall of indifference, but now he's back in the hole. He's getting depressed again. He says, I am such a low life. Life is so horrible. I've done such a bad job at things. And so he's going to get depressed again. Alter Rebbe says, relax. Hold your horses. Don't fly off the handle. Let me explain to you why this is really not a problem. Why isn't it a problem? Alter Rebbe says because although sadness as a rule is not a good thing, and something we have to rule out if at all possible, having said that, there is a value to this kind of negative emotion. And that kind of negative emotion, if it's depression, it's all bad. Because depression, as the Chassidim used to say, out of depression you go to sleep. But what you really need to do is create something called meriros, which means bitterness. And bitterness is better translated as frustration. And out of frustration, people get up and do something about it. So he says, you should get up and do something about it. If you're frustrated about the situation, if you're unhappy about the situation, well, then that's a good thing. Now, Alter Rebbe introduces a very, very fascinating, phenomenal idea, which, when you think about it, it's very, very simple, but it's also very profound. And the idea is that all of reality comes from a singular source. All of reality. What's the singular source? Kodesh Baruch Hashem. Hashem is all good. So if Hashem is all good, how come there's bad? Well, that's a really good question. We don't exactly have the answer, certainly on an emotional level, as to why there's bad. But one second, let's ask a different question. If we're talking about, forget the fact that there's physical, material, bad, and there's catastrophes that happen in a literal way, and why would God make bad things happen? Where does the Yetzer Hara come from? Where does Klipa come from? Where does the concept of concealing God's presence come from? How could such a thing be? If it all comes from God? And the answer is, God created those things purposefully. And there's this strange metaphor in the Zohar. And the metaphor of the Zohar is that there was a king, and he wanted to tempt his son and test his son to bring out his courage and spiritual mettle. But, you know, to be ruling, you have to be made of finer material, otherwise you're going to get corrupted by power and by money and by fame. And so he tempted. He paid this temptress. And this temptress' job was to seduce his son. But really, she was a loyal subject of the king. Forget that she made her living in a strange way, but she was a loyal subject. She didn't want to hurt the king. But the king said to her, this is what I want you to do. So she threw herself into it, and she did the best she could to seduce her son. But really, in her heart of hearts, she's hoping that she would fail, because she knew that if she succeeds, the king would be very, very unhappy. Not unhappy with her, but unhappy with her son. So this is the mushel that the Zohar gives us for understanding the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara has a job. Who gives him his job? Hashem gives him his job. Well, if Hashem wants me to do mitzvahs, why would he tempt me to do averus, to do the opposite? Well, that's the point. In order to make you great, in order to make you fantastic, in order to make you holy, in order to allow you the opportunity to be a partner with God and bringing godliness into this world, you have to be tempted and you have to overcome those temptations. And when you overcome those temptations, amazing things happen. Right? As we talked about yesterday at length in my sermon, Yiskafya, Vishapcha, when you create this business of crushing the inner desires, and when you perform restraint, and when you not only do that, but you even turn situations around, when you sublimate reality, then and then the glory of God is revealed in all worlds. Okay. So if everything is really good, the challenge then is in discovering the good in everything. Even the Yetzer Hara has to be good at some level. Now, obviously, it's not good to do an Aveda. So the metaphor that it's evoked is the concept of sweetening. Taste is the first sense that we develop as a child, as a baby. That's why babies put everything in their mouth to the consternation of their parents and grandparents, who think that the kid's going to die by putting all these germs in his mouth. And actually, that builds antibodies. That's what gives the children who are in a sterile environment don't have the ability to fight off disease later. It's a crazy thing, and you wouldn't feed your child dirt, but kids intuitively know they have to do this. And to our frustration, they do lots of it, right? We're good? Okay, so when things don't naturally taste good, what do we sometimes do? We sweeten them, and we find a way. Now, in certain civilizations, in certain cultures, in fact, they use very sharp cooking, and they use all kinds of very, very pungent and piercing odors and tastes, but they really enjoy it because they have to fix it, okay? You can't just eat it raw. I think something that all of us can relate to is something like garlic or onions. Nobody chews on an onion like an apple, and it's no fun to bite on a raw piece of garlic. But if you bake or cook or fry these things, then they taste very good. So you have to fix. You're not throwing out the onion, you're fixing the onion. You're extrapolating from the onion. You're taking that which is good. That's called hamtaka. That's called sweetening. Now, as a rule, when we talk about sweetening negativity in our life, sometimes it says you have to sweeten negativity through an abundance of chesed, through a lot of sweetness in life. And that means to emphasize the good and the positive to the point that it overwhelms the negative. But there's a problem with that. And the problem is that ultimately the negative has not gone anywhere. It's like some kids don't like their food, so they drown it in ketchup. The food is still there, which is a good thing because they're actually getting some nutrients. And the way you got it down their throat, what delivered the payload, was the ketchup. But if the ketchup disappears, then we're back at square one. The food, it really doesn't, the child doesn't like it. It's not good. What is possible, though, is sometimes to sublimate or transform the negative or the sharp, and so it becomes something which is either aromatic or tasty. And that's called hamtokas adinim. So what could be positive about a yetzahara who throws all kinds of things at us, first and foremost, to try to get us to be despondent? This is the yetzahara's number one tactic. First is to get you down. Because when you're in a bad mood, then you're susceptible, then you're wide open. So first, your first line of defense is being positive. Once the yetzahara gets you to be negative, great. Now your defenses are weakened, now the attack begins for real. There was once a chassid who said that it's better to be happy out of a material issue than to be despondent because of something spiritual. In other words, it's more dangerous. So being sad is not a good thing. Some people think that being religious means you have to be morose and miserable and walk around with your forehead wrinkled all day. And if you can throw a few tears in, my God, you're so holy, it's unbelievable. But really, it's not so. Really, it's not so. Really, it's about joy. It's about living with simcha, with the joy of knowing that Hashem is with you and loves you and so on and so forth. So how do I sweeten this judgment? And the answer is that the issue that sometimes develops when people are just happy is, I'm happy, why should I change? Everything's fine. Like, change is stimulated because we're unhappy about the current situation, because we feel a sense of frustration. And the more frustration you feel about something, the more you're going to do something about it. Otherwise, I'm happy. So what's the problem? Why should I change anything? But really, we should always be changing, because in Yiddishkeit, you have to continuously grow. You have to wax. Yelchu mechayel el choyel, we say. You go from strength to strength. And here it gets really interesting. Because this business of making a cheshbon, of making a calculation, is often performed by people intuitively, but entirely backwards, in the wrong way. People are always making calculations of their circumstances. They're always thinking about their bank account versus everybody else's bank account. They're always thinking about their material concerns versus everybody else's material concerns. And what is the result of when they finish analyzing my house, my car, my wardrobe, my fun, my relationships, my bank account? What's the end? What bottom line is? There's this sense of anger, frustration. I got the short end of the stick. I deserve better. Why should somebody else have more than me? Look how happy they are. And if only look how good their life is on Facebook. It doesn't matter that it's really not so, but you think their life is amazing on Facebook. I saw somebody post it once. May everybody's life be as good as it looks on Facebook. Okay?
New Rosh
Hashanah. Yeah. So everybody seems to be projecting this phenomenal, fantastic, wonderful life. And I'm miserable and I'm unhappy. And especially in the Western world today, we have this entitlement syndrome. I should have. I deserve. And why should they? If they have it, why I should have it too. I mean, think about it. If everybody had three hands and you had only two hands, you'd be depressed. Look at everybody's head with the three hands. They're so adept. They get so much stuff done. But now if a person born with three hands, it'd be the biggest rachmanus.
How would you play piano?
I don't know. The point is, we have this bar of what's called normal. So if everybody lost a hand and everybody in the whole world was left with just one hand, you wouldn't feel bad about it. It is what it is. That's what we have now. We used to have two hands. Now humanity has one hand. You wouldn't get depressed, but everybody has two hands. I have one hand? That's not fair. I mean, it's not fair. But it's not fair. I deserve. I have. I should be getting. We have this victim syndrome and entitlement syndrome, and then we get sad out of it. So this is what the cheshbon people are always making, and because of this cheshbon, people are always coming to sadness. Now, but really, the Alter Rebbe says that's all the wrong cheshbon. The cheshbon is supposed to be, look at that person, how they daven so assiduously, so devoted, and my mind keeps wandering. Man, I wish I could daven like that. And look how they have this way of connecting to people and bringing people closer to Yiddishkeit, and I'm just turning people off. I wish I could be able to connect to people that way. And look how much chesed they do, and look how little they expect in return. And you make a cheshbon, you make a calculation of somebody else's spiritual achievements versus your own spiritual achievements, which is the opposite of what we intuitively do. We always look and say, look how good I'm doing. Look, I'm ahead of all my neighbors. Look at this one and that one. And I gave more tzedakah, and I learned more Torah, and I spent more time davening, and I did all these things. So therefore, what's the sum total? I need a vacation. Enough. Enough. Why am I always the good guy? Why am I always have to be the one who's working so hard? Why do I have to be the one, the sucker, who's working harder at Yiddishkeit, who's doing more for the community, and nobody else is doing it, and I have to be the one who's getting the short end. Enough already. That's it. Let them pony up. Let them do. So what's the end of this cheshbon? And this cheshbon is, I'm unhappy, I'm miserable, and I'm doing less Yiddishkeit. It's a whole wrong cheshbon. How could you be mamtik? How could you sweeten that situation? Turn it inside out. When I look at the material, I should look at all the people who are sick, all the people who are missing limbs, all the people who are homeless in the street, and unfortunately, there are so many homeless people right here in the city of Toronto. They're busy inviting refugees in the whole world. Take care of your own. Mm. People sleeping in the streets, rahman al san, in this weather. How many people can't afford to pay the heating bills? How many people don't have food to eat? And we have a toilet that's running, a warm bed to sleep in, a roof over our heads. We have so much that so when a person finishes that cheshbon, he says, wow, why do I have so much? There's one guy in Shul, he says, how are you doing? He says, better than I deserve. I said, don't say that, but really, it's an amazing attitude. Who says I deserve? I deserve everything. So what should our cheshbon be? Our cheshbon should be, my davening is subpar, my learning is subpar, my chesed is subpar, my tzedakah is subpar, my Yiddishkeit, my iskasha seems to be stronger. And look at others who are doing better in that area, and then I come to a sense of frustration. Now, look, the two sound very similar, but they're actually mirror image, polar opposite. The first will bring you to inactivity spiritually and to accomplish absolutely nothing in the realm of Yiddishkeit, and you'll be sad. It'll bring you down. The second has the ability to motivate you to become a better person. That is the idea of Kinat Sofrim Tavi Chochma, correct. Of the jealousy of scribes increases books. And therefore the Alter Rebbe says, when a person makes this cheshbon and he gets sad, great! That sadness is healthy sadness, because it's not really sadness, it's frustration. And it brings you to a better place. So don't worry about making this calculation and then coming to a sad place. On the contrary, says Alter Rebbe, I brought you to a good place. And this is all kedei lahamtik hadinim, to sweeten the judgment, where the judgment isn't overwhelmed with ketchup, but instead it's diced and sliced, and you use herbs to bring out the flavor. And what was inedible before becomes especially tasty and delicious. And this is all shehein bechinas nefesh ha-bahamis. This is the animal soul. This is the Yetzirah. Kishasholet chas v'shalom al adam, when it subdues and controls the person, which all too often is what happens. Ki ein hadinim, because dinim, which is harshness, is only in nimtakin ela b'sharshon. You can't run away from the source. You have to attack the source. Only if you attack the source, only if you utilize and sublimate and redirect the source, will you actually succeed in what's called hamtaka and what's called sweetening. And that's the only way. You know, there's this famous story of the Jewish people coming out of Mitzrayim, and then they come to a place and the waters are bitter, and they're all complaining about the bitter water. And really, there's a teaching of the Maggid of Mizrach Kehem Marim, because they were bitter. But it's brought down in Chazal that the Moshe Rabbeinu was shown a stick, a twig, and he threw the twig in the water, and it sweetened the water. And it says that the stick was a bitter stick. In other words, Hamtaka, the way the Zohar puts it, this is Hamtaka, this is the sweetening of Dinim with Dinim Kashim. You have to get to its source. So only the bitter stick could actually reveal the bitterness of that particular water, turning it into sweet water. So this is something that all of us have to work on. And this is the meaning, l'chein amur azal, that's why the Gemara said, l'olam yagiz adam yetzer tov, ala yetzer hara, that a person should always anger. You should whip up a fury of the yetzer tov. Yetzer tov should attack the yetzer hara. You low life, how dare you? You're trying to bring me down. You're trying to ruin my life. I know what I came to this world for. I didn't come here to drink coffee and have fun. I came to this world to be live a life that's filled with meaning. And here you are. You keep giving me this obfuscation. And he gets actually angry about it. Frustrated is the word. The key is frustrated. Now, the Alter Rebbe just said the word, it says la'olam. La'olam means always. Meaning this is the approach. So the Alter Rebbe says la'olam doesn't mean always. It doesn't mean, what does it mean? It means, v'hainu, la'olam, la'olam, which means the world, or continuously, always means, b'chol eis sh'raya b'nafshesh t'sarach l'chach. La'olam doesn't mean always. You shouldn't always be walking around frustrated. Frustrating people are not fun to be around. You should, at the time when you're feeling frustrated anyways, and we all get frustrated sometimes, we all get negative and despondent, turn that into frustration. Turn that into growth, into something positive. So, b'chol eis, when's all time sh'raya b'nafshe sh'tzarech l'kach, when you need it, not always. Achshas ha'kosher, when is the ideal time? Because you have to know how to utilize situations. And utilize situations is when you have a shoham yuchedes v'ra'uy l'kach l'roiv bnei adam. You have a situation which is perfect timing. What's perfect timing? Haynu b'shashri eitzev b'lavi hachi. A person's in a bad mood anyway. For whatever reason. Because of mili d'alma, because of a lack of the material reality. Something in the physical is not the way it should be. Whether God forbid it's health or it's family or it's finances. Things aren't the way it should be. So people get down. Ah, you shouldn't get down about these things? Okay, I shouldn't. I'm not a tzaddik. I do get down about them. So now I'm down. Utilize that situation when I'm feeling that negativity. Now is the time to rotate the situation. Now is the time to utilize that negativity to fight the Yetzirah. Or sometimes, b'li shum siba, it's human nature. People get moody. That's the way it is. Some people get more moody, some people get less moody. But if you fall into that despondent, silly mood, use it. Sometimes you can't fight it. Sometimes the mood comes. So you have to use it for something positive. And this is the wondrous idea of Chassidus, where you take something which is worldly negative and you turn it into a great positive. It becomes a catalyst for growth. The truth is that our godly soul is supposed to utilize the material body for good things. That's the truth. And the truth is, if we have physical strength and physical beauty and physical charisma and physical wherewithal and physical intelligence, these are all qualities that can be used for positive purposes. They all can be used right. So, but the thing is, in order for the godly soul to be able to communicate with the physical body, it needs an animal soul to work with. You need to be alive. Otherwise, you're a ghost. You're a neshama. And neshamas can't work. There needs to be a nexus. And the nexus is the animal soul. The problem is that this nexus is a loose cannon. This middleman, animal soul, has ideas of his own. So it's like you hire somebody, and he's running the company for you, but you have to constantly keep him in check because he has his own ideas. You're a big academic, you have this amazing vision and so on and so forth, but somebody's got to work with the actual people, with the HR, the human resources. You can't deal with that. You're coming up with ideas, you see the world forum, you see the world economy, you know what's coming next, you know how to anticipate, but you can't build the actual company. The actual workforce, you need somebody to manage it for you. Problem is, this guy's got a mind of his own. So you have to constantly monitor him, and you have to utilize him, and you have to make him feel like he's part of the company, give him stock, and make him feel satisfied. And motive is, this is the point. So the point here is that we have to utilize the godly soul, the animal soul, for the purpose of the godly soul. We have this idea from the Baal Shem Tov that why does it say Yom Tov? It says V'yismuchu b'cha. We're supposed to rejoice in God. So we're supposed to rejoice in God. Then why do we have meat? And why do we have meals? And why do we? The answer is very simple. The answer is because V'yismuchu b'cha. The nefesh elikis wants to rejoice in God. But in order for the nefesh elikis to rejoice in God, it's healthy to give the animal to eat a little also. There was a chassid who used to sit down Shabbos morning to learn chassidus, and he would eat a piece of cake and have a sweet coffee and said, "Okay, you happy now? Happy now?" And he would say, "Have you want another piece of cake? Have another piece of cake, but remember, after this, leave me alone, and I'm learning chassidus." And this is how ubezei yipater me'ha'atzvos shemili da'alma. And this way, you can get rid of the sadness in a material sense and have the koyach to do positive things. To be continued.
Thank you.
Okay. Hello. Hello.